Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this classic episode. Yes, you, we know who you are. Well, maybe we don't, but someone does, right?
Oh, man, you guys, we made this in 2014.
Wow.
Yeah, and we asked the question way back then, can you be anonymous on the internet? In 2014.
Yeah, it's a question still being asked today. I think we all kind of know the answer, but there's a lot to it, and it's really interesting to hear this take from this oldie but goodie classic episode. Check it out.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
All right. Hello. Welcome to the show. If that intro by our super producer, Noel, was familiar, then that means you are in the right place, ladies and gentlemen. This is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. I'm Ben. You're probably wondering where Matt is. He is off on an adventure that maybe we'll get to in the course of this show. But in place of Matt today, we have not one, but two very special guests from Tech Stuff, from Brain Stuff, from Forward Thinking. I don't even know how you guys found time to come on this show. Jonathan Strickland and Lauren Vogelbaum.
Ben, we found time because we literally just recorded another Tech Stuff episode with you like 10 minutes ago.
Thanks for not giving away our time travel scheme. That was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that we have got that out of the bag. Out of the bag, man, which is only going to be funny if you listen to the other episode.
Yes.
Right, because this is a sequel.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, a companion piece, a sister episode, if you
it
will.
It is. Now, you guys were kind enough or had poor enough taste to have me on your show just a few minutes ago when we recorded a great episode on how to surf the web anonymously or whether it's even possible.
Mm-hmm.
And this led us to something that we thought was right up the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know's alley. Because listeners out there now, you guys know as well as everybody else does now that it turns out the United States government in particular was putting a lot more energy into tracking people than we had all thought.
Yeah. I mean, even if you take it at face value, where, you know, you have this system, specifically the NSA we're talking about here with the...
And PRISM specifically within the NSA.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That if you take it at face value that what they were looking for were foreign agents. So if you are a United States citizen, then in theory, you mm-hmm. would not, a United States citizen who is not involved in one of these schemes, you would not be considered a foreign agent. And therefore, not part of this surveillance, even if you take that at face value, they would look for people who they did identify as foreign agents and the people that those folks talked to, right?
Yeah, they played the Kevin Bacon game.
Yeah, and if you've ever played the Kevin Bacon game, you know that it gets pretty easy to start linking two people you never thought would have had a connection to each other together. It doesn't really take that many levels of separation, right?
Right. And furthermore, they're really collecting information on everyone and sorting through it in order to find these specific people. But the fact that they're collecting and storing this information about all of us is creepy.
It's problematic. So, again, even taken on face value, it's troublesome. And then when you realize the actual methodology, it becomes downright concerning. I mean, it's not just that, oh, well, there's some issues here from a technological perspective. The very methodology is problematic.
I think that's well said. So one of my first questions for you guys before we really get into this is, if, let's say 20 years ago, if someone had come up to you in 1994 and said, the government is watching everything and it's just going to watch more, would you have thought it was sort of conspiracy bunk, or would you have thought there was a possibility of it happening?
I would have thought bunk for sure.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's largely because, well, I mean, in 94,
the capability just wasn't there, I don't think.
Yeah. When you're talking about how much data gets created or transferred or copied or transmitted, however you want to look at it, it's an astronomical number. It is an enormous number. Let's just take YouTube as the example of data creation. Mm-hmm. And, okay, so on YouTube, every single minute that passes, more than 100 hours of video footage is being uploaded to YouTube. Some of that's duplicate footage, but it doesn't really matter. That's a huge amount of information. Now, just kind of extrapolate. Imagine that the entire internet, this network of computer networks, is filled with people who are either creating information or accessing it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And the accessing of information does in itself create a certain amount of metadata,
meta-information. Yeah. There's information about who accessed what and when. This is such an enormous amount that most of us would think that being able to capture it and filter it and make any meaning of it would be a gargantuan task beyond our capabilities. But
right.
It is a gargantuan task, but it's not, as it turns out, beyond our capabilities.
Exactly. It turns out that our technology is sufficiently sophisticated enough to be able to weed through that kind of stuff.
Or at least we're working very hard on it. I mean, not the three of us at this table that I'm personally aware of. But
well, and Google is a perfect example of how we should have really kind of reevaluated this idea that it's just too big, right? Because Google has created a business that, for at least the forward-facing part of their business, that's the search engine. You know, arguably you would say that a real business is advertising, but
right. But
the search engine is the product that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good search engine if you're trying to find something specific. And once we realize how much information is out there and how Google has developed an algorithm that can effectively find the stuff you actually want to see, then you start to realize, oh, I guess it really is possible to build in a similar kind of tool that could be useful if you were looking for signs of activity, if you happen to be an enormous government organization that is in charge of discovering cryptic messages sent between foreign agents that could potentially affect your country.
Or friends of foreign agents.
Yes.
Or people who know friends of foreign agents.
Yes, that's the problem, is that this ripples outward, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it were just the foreign agents, that becomes an issue, because then you have to be able to reliably identify a foreign agent versus someone who is not a foreign agent.
Right.
But then if you go one ripple outward, who are these people talking to and why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can understand why you would be interested in that, but there are going to be people in that one ripple outward who are not in any way connected with anything nefarious, but they're going to get swept up in that surveillance anyway. Mm-hmm. If you go a further ring out,
go for it.
That's an enormous number of people. This is what Facebook is completely built upon. The whole idea of that social network.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever see any of their presentations, you just see how this one small group of people who have these interconnections between each other become this ginormous mass of people when you just go out a couple of steps.
Yeah. Now, this, I'm glad that we're talking about this, because this is something that escapes a lot of people, that the government agency, the NSA, has automated the collection and analysis of this stuff for people who are concerned. You know, the NSA is listening in on my phone calls and reading my emails. They're taking your phone calls and emails, and they're keeping them, like you said, Lauren. And what they'll do is, if you pop up on a different algorithm, then they'll actually have a human, like any other big organization, from a call center to the FBI, it's kind of difficult to actually get to a human. You have to go through a few steps.
Yes.
You gotta dial one, wait for stuff. You
listen to a robot voice.
And I hate it. Just a side note. I hate it when the automated line won't let you just push a button, and you have to stand there wherever you are and look really stupid and go, operator.
Yeah.
Operator.
Or you're saying, yes.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
And everybody's so solemn. We all just said the same yes. But moving from this, before we go too deep on the government, we should make a point that they're not the only people looking at web activity when we talk about being anonymous.
Yeah. I mean, companies obviously are looking at a lot of web activity as well, for multiple reasons. Mostly companies are looking at activity in order to make more money.
Right. They want to be able to sell you stuff better, or to sell you as a consumer to an advertising company so that that advertising company can sell you stuff better.
Yeah. Yeah. It all comes down to, you know, where are the dollars? Where are they coming from, and where are they going to? And so, we, the users, end up playing a big role in that. I mean, we are the ones who generate revenue for companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it weren't that way, the internet would be a very different place. For one thing, it would not be nearly as robust as it is, right? It would be mainly limited to communication lines between things like research institutes and the government, which, big surprise, that's what originally the internet was all about.
Right, back when it was ARPANET.
ARPANET, yeah. ARPANET was essentially connections between scientific research institutes, universities, and government installations, and that was it. And that was because, you know, that was what it was built for. It was built to be this really fast communications and networking ability so that people could share things very effectively. What it's grown into is this crazy world that melds things like entertainment and commerce and communications all into one big package, which in many ways is legitimately awesome. Obviously, we wouldn't have jobs if there weren't an internet, or at least we wouldn't have these jobs.
Yeah.
We are on the internet right now.
Yeah. Well, you guys get paid. I'm here for community service. Well,
but your internship has lasted longer than any other I've ever seen.
That's true. Hey, will you sign off for my hours before this is over?
Of course.
Thanks, guys.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching The Furthest Thing from the Truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
He started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One question, though, that a lot of people will have is the following. Just a little bit of background here. The question is surfing anonymously legal? The background here is that often the desire to surf anonymously is depicted as one that is inherently sinister.
That is the same sort of perception that is given to things like torrents,
mm-hmm.
now, or peer-to-peer networks. Peer-to-peer networks, as they are by themselves, are not sinister or shady or illegal, right? A peer-to-peer network is just a means of distribution of files.
Right. But when you start distributing files that you don't have the right to distribute via that network, that's where the illegal activity comes in.
And then you end up sort of casting this shadow across the entire technology. So there are companies like music and movie companies that just say peer-to-peer networks alone are bad, because those are a lot of the ways that illegal file sharing got spread around, you know, just a few years ago. Now it's not even that big of a deal because you can get pretty much everything in a billion different places. But, you know, if you're talking about just trying to surf anonymously, it all depends upon where you are in the world.
Yeah.
In the United States, it's not a big deal. There's no law that you'd be breaking by trying to hide your IP address. The laws that you would be breaking would be if you tried to do anything illegal while you were doing that, or even if you weren't, whether or not you're trying to hide what you're doing. If you're doing something illegal, that's against the law. Kind of easy.
Right. Yeah. Like you don't have to use Tor to buy drugs. There are many other reasons that you can use Tor.
Yeah.
But if you do buy drugs,
that's against the law. And then if you are caught, you could be punished for it, or you will be if you're caught.
I see. Yeah. So here in the West, in the United States, Canada, and so on, there is not a law against surfing the web anonymously. I don't think it's even against the law to go into some of the deep web stuff to which we alluded, which you guys have covered in a previous episode,
sure.
And Matt and I have covered as well. We're talking about the Silk Road and not the historic one through Central Asia.
Right.
But as you said, other countries have different perspectives. Like, you've got a great example about China.
Sure. Yeah. China, they have a program in China that is called the Golden Shield Project, also more commonly known as the Great Firewall of China. And the reason for this is that it's an effort on part of the Chinese government to censor and have surveillance over internet activities within China. So the main purpose of it is to prevent objectionable material, as defined by the Chinese government,
right,
from getting to Chinese citizens using the internet. So,
right. They flat out block some websites.
Yep. Sure.
And some search terms and stuff like that.
And some, things like Facebook. Like, you can't access Facebook in China, if you were just trying to connect to a Chinese ISP and go through Chinese,
completely normal methods.
Yeah.
Right.
Domain name server. So if you were to just use like plug and play You're just trying to use your browser to get to certain places. You would find out there's some websites you just cannot access that way in China. In order to access those websites, you have to circumvent the protections that have been put in place. In general, this is not seen as a huge deal, right? It's frowned upon. You're not supposed to do it. But as far as I am aware, no one has been persecuted and or prosecuted for trying to circumnavigate the firewall of China. However, if you were to do something such as post messages that are anti-Chinese government to websites, then that is very much considered against the law, and they will look for you, and if they find you and catch you, they'll punish you.
Yeah.
Right. And it might also be used as perhaps a pretext for arresting someone, at least in that country.
Yes.
Kind of the same way the tax evasion was the crime for which Capone was ultimately arrested.
Yeah. In some cases, depending again upon what country you are in, this might be the door that opens up so that they can get you for what they really want you for.
Right. And when we say we're not especially picking on China. Oh, although I do have to say there's one really cool thing that freaks me out a bit. And if you are on just the regular, you know, the version of the interstate internet in China, every so often these two cartoon police characters will pop up on the screen just to let you know that they're looking out for you guys. Oh. They're protecting you.
Yeah.
Wow.
They're protecting and serving by making sure you're not doing anything wrong. Actually, what they're doing is they're protecting you by making sure all that terrible information that would flood your browser if it only had the chance, because they know you are an upstanding Chinese citizen and would never try to access that kind of stuff. But that stuff is trying to get at you no matter what. And those cops, they are making sure that you are going to be safe from it.
They also have blue eyes, which is very weird. Their names are Jing Jing and Cha Cha. It's based on a pun that means police in Chinese. So check it out and Google it if you have a chance. Just remember that China will know you looked at it. Earlier, we mentioned Tor, the Onion router, right?
Right.
And, what I wanted to ask about is, if you could, cause you guys are the experts here on, technical matters, if you could outline briefly for our listeners, what's the difference between like a privacy mode on a browser and something like Tor?
Ah, that's a great question.
In brief, a privacy browser on your home computer does absolutely nothing to protect what you are doing from anyone aside from someone who is looking purely at your home computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm going to text Matt real quick.
While you're doing that, I'll continue to explain. So yeah, the privacy mode, what it's doing is it's preventing stuff that would normally show up in, say, your search history, your browsing history, cookies. It's preventing all that kind of stuff from happening so that someone who gets access to your machine can't just look and see what it is you've been up to. However, anyone who can see the traffic that's going across your local network, that includes perhaps other machines that are also on the local network, your router, the modem, your ISP, all of these entities know exactly what you are doing, because in order for you to get the stuff you're trying to get, these entities have to know where to send it.
So, up to and including the website that you're accessing, they know who you are as well.
Right. Yeah. At least they know the IP address.
Oh, well, yes.
And they know what network it's going to. So really it's, you know, you can't hide your IP address perfectly, because if you did, no information would ever come back to your computer.
Now we do have an interesting fact here, and by interesting I mean disturbing. So I'll just go ahead and ask: how much information does someone, a company or a government or whomever, need about you before they can figure out who you are?
All right, this is kind of fascinating. Did you ever hear the story about how Target had identified a customer as being pregnant? It was it turned out to be a young lady, a teenager. And so Target.
Many pregnant people are ladies.
That would be true.
Continue.
That is true, Lauren. Thank you. Is a good point. A young lady, pregnant.
parents don't know.
Parents don't know. Parents don't know. She has not told them. And Target starts proactively sending her offers for things that a pregnant lady wouldn't possibly need. And her father found the offers and got very upset, saying like, why is Target sending this unsolicited stuff? What are you saying about my daughter?
Yeah.
Raised a big fuss about it.
You have offended my dignity. And, that's how I picture him speaking.
Yeah. So it was a Southern gentleman from the fine city of Savannah.
He went up there with a white glove and just slapped the front door.
Yeah.
I challenge your entire organization to a duel.
So.
Yeah. No, that's not exactly what happened, but he did raise a fuss.
Right.
And then later wrote a follow-up message saying, I had a talk with my daughter. It turns out that I was not aware that she was pregnant. But this raised the point of, how did Target know? What was it that gave Target the information? How did they predict this?
Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, the company had been watching her purchase patterns.
Yes.
And determined that, statistically speaking,
she was very likely pregnant. And so this is an illustration that you don't have to have actively shared some information about yourself for an entity or a person to draw conclusions about at least what your physical state is, or what your state of mind might be, even if it's not your specific name and identity.
Right.
It could be enough to be able to single out who you are from a level that's separate from, my name is Jonathan Strickland and I live in Atlanta, right?
Oh, we just found you.
That actually would be very easy.
there are
probably very few Jonathan Stricklands living in Atlanta. There might be a few, because I know there are a lot of other Jonathan Stricklands.
Lauren Vogelbaum might be the easiest to ping directly.
You might
of
be
the
able to zoom in pretty quickly.
At any rate.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the real answer to this question, according to research specialists, is that 33 bits of information called bits of entropy in this identification business are required in order to narrow it down to a specific person out of all the people on Earth.
And these bits of information can be anything from your gender to the type of car you drive
to your zip code to like it doesn't have to be the same 33 bits in order. It could be any 33 bits. And bit in this case means something specific. Like in the computer world, we talk about digital, these binary digits. That's what a bit is. It's either a zero or a one, which you could think of as either a no or a yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some pieces of information represent a single bit. Like gender is considered to be a single bit. Putting gender discussions aside, for many people, this would be male or female.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. That obviously oversimplifies things, but for the purposes for identification, male, female tends to be, the way that they look at a very black and white kind of approach.
Right.
That represents one bit. Something like your zip code might be several bits of information.
I see.
That would make up just one zip code. But all it takes is 33 bits. Some of those bits might be connected to a larger concept, like your model of car, the specific region you live in, whatever it is.
Your age,
Your age, that's another good one. But all you need are 33 bits worth of this information to be able to identify. And the reason for that is you take this yes or no. That's a base of two, right? You've got two options. You take that two, then you have the 33 different bits. That's 2^33. If you work that out, that ends up being more than 8 billion. 2^33 power is more than 8 billion. There are 7 billion people on Earth.
Wait, we've got made up people in this.
It means that we have more than enough information to account for the 7 billion people who are actually alive. So, the idea is that with those 33 bits, you can then have enough personal identifiable information to narrow it down to a specific individual.
And also, it's devilishly easy to forget that what you're putting out on the internet personally identifies you, right? People say all sorts of things that they imagine are innocuous. I mean, Twitter is in the Congressional Library now.
Yep. Yeah, you can get download an entire Twitter history, which is, for some of us, quite a large file, as it turns out. I think I have more than 17,000 tweets. So, I clearly am not as worried about anonymity as some people are. Perhaps that is a foolish thing on my part, but, there's an interesting example of this as well. Researchers at Stanford and the University of Texas were able to identify Netflix viewers based upon their activity. And part of that was because these viewers would do things like leave reviews for movies on other sites.
Whoops.
And just by looking at this stuff you wouldn't think would personally identify you, right? Because it's just you, your opinion about a movie. It's not, hey, I happen to be 5 foot whatever. I'm not telling you.
Yeah, but the point being then is that there's some puzzle solving that can happen very easily, right?
Yeah.
Because they say, anonymous user A watched this thing on Netflix at this time. And then, oh, surprise, shortly thereafter, anonymous user A. And they said that this was, they gave it 3 stars and look what they did on Netflix.
Like this anonymous user A watched a particular movie at a particular time. Mm. This other person whose identity we know left a review on IMDb. And based upon the time between these two events, we're reasonably certain that anonymous user A is this person we know.
And anonymous user A is completely wrong about Big Trouble in Little China.
Which
That's
is
what
an amazing movie.
Thank you, Jonathan.
It is not a good bad movie. It is a good movie.
Because he's the sidekick the whole time.
Anyway, Porkchop Express. Come on.
Right. So what is the tour project about. You guys have done a, podcast on this. Matt and I have done some videos, but we've never done a full podcast on it.
So it's tour, you know, kind of stands for the Onion Router. It's really its own name now. It's just Tor.
Sure. Originally, the Onion Router was based on the idea that it's encrypting things in layers.
Yes. So that you would go information from point A to point Z, let's say, would go through all these different layers. And between each layer, things would get encrypted in a different way. So from layer 1 to layer 2, it would get encrypted. Layer 2 to layer 3, it would get encrypted. Layer 3 to layer 4, it'd get a different level of encryption. Mm-hmm. And
furthermore, each layer, each node in this connection mm-hmm. only knows the node before it and after it.
Which is key.
It doesn't know the entire chain.
Exactly.
I see.
So the idea being that this node, this series of nodes makes a circuit. That circuit is connecting your computer running a Tor browser mm-hmm. to whatever site or whatever information you were trying to retrieve. But that circuit of nodes has very limited information in any individual piece of the overall circuit, right? So if you identified that there's one node in this network and you see that information is coming from the node immediately preceding it and it's going to the node following it, mm-hmm. you wouldn't be able to reconstruct the rest of the circuit. That's all the information you would be able to get. So if there are like six nodes in this circuit and you've identified node number 3, you can only see that information's coming from node 2 and it's going to node 4. You wouldn't be able to see where node 1, 5, or 6, where those are in that circuit.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to see the original sender or the intended receiver. And
right.
hopefully, if it's encrypted well enough, you wouldn't be able to read the message either.
Exactly. Because, again, it gets encrypted between each node in that circuit. It sounds pretty secure, right?
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. What could possibly go wrong?
As it turns out, there are ways to try and figure out who is trying to access what. So in this world where you're looking at all these connections that mm-hmm. get hidden because it's traveling through all these nodes,
right.
you might be able to see all the potential start points and all the potential end points, but you don't really know which people are trying to access which sites or which servers. However, if you were to be able to analyze all the traffic across the network and build enough of a statistical model, you could start weeding people out and start looking at the potential people going to the potential endpoints.
You could play the something like the target game. You could use big data to analyze and then maybe even predict.
Yeah. So essentially this is really oversimplifying it, but essentially you might see that let's say person A, mm-hmm. the anonymous A, is trying to access Silk Road.
All okay.
right. And so you see anonymous person A's connection light up. It then goes across these nodes, which mix everything else up. And you are already looking at Silk Road. So you are specifically, you've already identified the potential target and the potential destination. And then you see that the Silk Road one lights up in the amount of time you would expect for this message to have to transfer
across
these nodes.
Right.
Then you'd say, aha, this is a potential hit. And then you continue to analyze traffic. This can actually help de-anonymize. I can't even say it. How would you say it?
De-anonymize?
Thank you.
There you go.
Anemone. De-anemone the network.
Right. Okay.
So, but no, it really is. This is a potential way where you can figure out at least which connection was trying to connect to which server. And it steps back from the actual circuit entirely. And it may not be enough to move on a person, you know, with full legal backing, but it might be enough to convince you to really look into that person more closely.
So there's really no safe harbor for complete anonymity on Tor, because if somebody wants to find you, or if they want to find the needle in the haystack, with enough diligence, they can.
Well, I mean, it's at least possible for them to, for someone really determined and with the right resources to be able to start narrowing things down, right?
Certainly. And there are a few other problems with Tor. I mean, it's an open source thing. That's part of the way that the system actually protects itself in a kind of anti-logical
sort of
way.
It might seem counterintuitive, but it really is, because it means that anyone can go in and look at this. So if someone changes something or someone puts in a change, this is a community that's looking after the whole product. So it's not something that would be easy to slip in, without anyone taking notice of it. Also, its origins kind of raise some eyebrows.
Yes, the origin from naval research, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as it turns out, there are reasons why, say, a military organization would want to be able to send information secretly, or perhaps access information in secret.
Even within itself, right?
Yeah, even itself. Even apart from other organizations within that same government. When we talk about the NSA, there are other government organizations that are equally upset as
most of them, in fact.
Yeah,
I think.
Quite a few. You know, there are citizens who are up all about this. I mean, they're very upset about it, as I think they should be. Mm-hmm. That's my own personal opinion. But there are government organizations that are working for the same people.
Sure.
Who are equally upset.
There are wheels within wheels.
Yes.
Would be the X-Files line.
I mean, you've got those great rivalries between the CIA and the NSA that date back to the beginning of both organizations.
Right.
They're pretty phenomenal.
And, recently, as we're recording this, more and more information about, what we would call friendly fire surveillance has leaked. People who had not only the wherewithal, but the motivation to keep their communications private or anonymous, like members of Congress, found that not only was the NSA, but the FBI as well, monitoring their day-to-day emails and phone calls and whatnot. The thing that was really important to underline here is that it's not inherently sinister to surf the web anonymously, and it's possible to do it, as we said in our earlier thing, but it's not really plausible. And
not for a long-term solution.
No, it's a once-off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we do tell you guys, listeners, in Jonathan Lauren's show, we show you how theoretically you could make yourself, if not impossible to trace, very, very inconvenient to do so.
Right.
Right, but it's basically like burner phone, burner internet connection, burner face, like you really
total
have to
disguise.
Go.
Yeah. You got to pretty much be, you have to really limit what it is you want to do, and you have to very much limit the way you do it. So in other words, it's not like you can just use that methodology to do everything you would want to do on the web. Because there's some cool stuff that's on the web that I love to do that there's just no way to do anonymously. Not truly.
Right. Right. Like, can you really have a full corgi watching experience if you can't log in and comment?
That also is a reference to the Tech Stuff episode. You'll learn way more about corgi obsessions in that show.
I think it's enthusiasm. I don't think we've crossed the line into obsession yet.
That's very
let me
kind
close out
that.
A couple of tabs.
So while Jonathan's closing out a couple of tabs, I do just want to set you guys up for one more big question. If you like our show Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, listeners, then you'll love Tech Stuff, because they have also been talking about several different revelations, both with security and the nuts and bolts about how these kind of things work. So we highly recommend their show. And I have to ask you guys, since you're the ones with the know-how, if you had to guess or speculate, do you think that there would be more news forthcoming? Like the whole Snowden disclosure thing where he said, you know, he kicked down the door of the news organizations and said, they're spying on everybody.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else that would happen? Because it seems like that's the big reveal,
well,
right?
Well, I mean, we only know what we know, right? You can bet a couple of things. Okay. You can bet that anything that has happened since Snowden has left is largely unknown to us because he was the source of the leak. So anything that has been done to address that or change things, evolve the technologies that's being used or to fine tune them in different ways or even apply them in even more broad applications.
Or to fine tune the process by which they make sure that other people don't leak their information.
Yeah, all of that is unknown to us. So we can't really be sure what's going on. What we do know is just based upon the information that's been revealed so far, there already have been abuses of the system. See, that's the other thing to keep in mind. Even if somehow you could agree that the NSA system is on its own, maybe you could call it flawed, but it mostly works. Let's say that you even make that assumption. The problem is it's run by people. And people, as it turns out, are flawed. Very much so. And some people will take advantage of having the opportunity to use such a powerful tool to do things like snoop on ex-girlfriends.
And even if someone isn't doing it nefariously, there could certainly be mistakes made.
Yeah. So there are a lot of issues that will probably come to light as we get more people, investigating this. The interesting thing to me is really seeing how much movement we see in political circles to actually address this in a meaningful way. Because you do have lots of people, you have lots of representatives who are at least saying that they want more transparency.
Right.
Because their constituents are demanding it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they're kind of demanding it too. I mean, it sounds like.
Yeah, once they found out that
they were also
emails,
included, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
But, that's one of the big debates always is it a matter of sincere offense or fashionable offense, fashionable indignation? And that's something that I think we will see in the future, with our listeners. We'd like to hear from you guys as well. What do you think the next big revelations about the internet would be? And here's one, can you or have you surfed the web anonymously? Let's see if you could write in and let us know and still stay anonymous. I don't know. Let's just see if it works. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Jonathan and Lauren. You guys, thank you so much for coming on our show. I wish I knew what had happened to Matt. We haven't really said it on air, but if you want to go ahead and reveal
I can reveal at this point that Matt, in fact, was buried under a pile of corgi puppies. And he's all right, but he's pinned and cannot move.
He's the happiest that he has ever been, but he is stuck.
He has been saying that I cannot breathe and that's okay, in various languages. It's weird. He actually is really fluent, but
yeah,
only in that one phrase.
Yeah, he's really smart, but it's strange that he only knows that phrase.
Yeah.
So, I guess maybe I'll go try to find him and get him out, because we still need him for the show.
Yeah, he's got some stuff he needs to edit too.
Yeah.
And honestly, those puppies are starting to get tired, and he just keeps on picking up the ones that are wanting to nap and putting them back on his stomach. There needs to be an intervention.
Okay. I know the pile of puppies you were talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
No, he's under there.
Yes.
Yeah.
The third pile.
Yes. No, not the first two.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. No, no, those are ours.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. As I said, guys, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and being our very first guest. I'd also like to let listeners know that if you like this show, as you said, you'll enjoy Tech Stuff, but these folks aren't just on Tech Stuff. They are on another excellent podcast called Forward Thinking, which is also a video series, and you can see all three of us, I think, at various points participating in everyday science shenanigans on a show called Brain Stuff.
You can actually see all three of us in the episode about product placement.
Oh, boy. That one. I forgot about that.
Shark jaws.
Yeah, well, if you want to see why they're laughing at me, you can check that one out, too. You can find stufftheydontwantyoutoknow.com for every video and every podcast we've ever made. And, of course, we're all over the internet. You can drop us a line with a suggestion or feedback on Twitter or Facebook. That's where we put a lot of the stories that don't make it into videos or podcasts. So do check it out.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. it'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.